Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. You're confident when it comes to your work and life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same confidence when it comes to refinancing your existing mortgage or buying a home. It lets you understand all the details so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Today, Netflix releases To the Bone, which follows a young woman struggling with anorexia. Some say it glamorizes the eating disorder, that it could be triggering. Others, that it raises awareness, encourages conversation. And it comes right on the tail of 13 Reasons Why, the Netflix series that stirred controversy over how it depicts teen suicide. Is upsetting imagery more powerful than the intended message? What's the responsibility of the media to vulnerable viewers? This hour on Point, To the Bone, and how the media influences our behavior. You can join us on air or online. Have you heard the buzz on To the Bone? What's your take? Are there certain rules the media needs to follow when handling upsetting material? Is there a correct message to send? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now via Skype from Seattle, Washington, is Melanie McFarland. She's the TV critic at Salon. She has reviewed To the Bone, among many others. Melanie, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, John.
Melanie, I want to start by playing a brief clip from this movie in which Ellen, who's played by Lily Collins, obsessively counts the number of calories on her plate with her sister, played by Liana Liberato.
All right, ready? 280 for the pork, 350 for the buttered noodles, 150 for the roll, and 75 for butter. It's like you have calorie Asperger's.
Now, Melanie, let me start with two questions. One, what was your view of the film in general, the merits of the movie? And secondly, do you believe that it glamorizes anorexia?
To the first question, I would say that the film is incredibly empathetic. I wouldn't necessarily say it was a must-see in terms of its overall artistic execution. I'm not sure that it's a show. It's a movie that I would have chosen to see if I hadn't been assigned to see it, to be honest.
So, bottom line, as a movie, you don't think it was a very good movie.
I don't think that it's not that it wasn't very good. I think it's incredibly dark, and I think that it has a very specific point of view, and that point of view is Marty Noxon's point of view, which is to say, this is a woman who has a long history with struggling with eating disorders, and this was her specific interpretation of what it's like as filtered through Lily Collins' character, Ellen. So I do think that in terms of the artistic execution, it hits all the right points. I think the performances are wonderful. I'm just not sure it's the kind of movie that a person would necessarily go to unless they had a specific reason for or you know, they were compelled for some specific reason to see it.
And what about the glamorizing question?
So, and I've said this before, I do know people who live with eating disorders. I have never experienced it myself. So I say that if only to say that, you know, for me, a part of it was incredibly hard to watch as someone who does not have personal experience with this. So I don't know that it was necessarily glamorizing it. The argument can be made that Lily Collins is a Hollywood actress who is a very glamorous figure. I think that that's one of the criticisms that the film has come under. And it's very specifically a white female experience. So I do think that I think that's an important aspect of answering that question, because I think that part of the reason that this film has kind of come under fire is that it's another film that demonstrates eating disorders as specifically about anorexics and specifically about white females. So I think in that regard, it's kind of difficult to definitively answer whether it glamorizes it. Does it glamorize the disorder in terms of how it looks? No, it looks horrible. She's seen there's makeup accentuating how emaciated Ellen has gotten. But in terms of glamorizing, in terms of that aspect of it, it's kind of hard to say. I don't believe it is.
All right, let's talk for a moment about the other movie that sparked a similar criticism lately. It's from the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why, released in March, following the fictional story of Hannah Baker, played by Katherine Langford, a teenage girl who documents all the reasons that she's chosen to take her life. In this final moment from her last tape, she offers parting words just a few hours before committing suicide.
I think I've made myself very clear. But no one's coming forward to stop me. Some of you cared. None of you cared enough. And neither did I. And I'm sorry.
Now, Melanie, as a critic, are you persuaded by the idea that pieces of art like that series or To the Bone in fact have profound effects on how people behave?
From my point of view, if someone has something in them, any kind of mental illness or disorder that is already influencing them on a physical level, on a psychological level, whether they see a series like 13 Reasons Why or a movie like To the Bone, that's something that they're already contending with. The idea of something being triggering, absolutely, something could be triggering. That said, I think that the reaction over 13 Reasons Why is a bit different in that one of the specific criticisms that you don't see going on behind that narration that you just played, that clip, is that there's a very specific and graphic scene of Hannah actually committing suicide. She's getting into a bathtub and she's slitting her wrists, and it's very, very specific. And the producer said that the reason they wanted to be graphic is to show that it's not a pretty romantic process. Now, a number of schools and parents and, people have gotten online and debated this, saying that it should be banned and it was irresponsible. But I've always said that it's better, specifically if something is directed or it's a young adult targeted piece, it's better to sit down and actually talk about that with the audience, with a young audience, and actually listen to them as opposed to banning it. I mean, and this has been going on, since I was a kid. There were certain films that I was not allowed to watch, and I watched them anyway. I wish that I had been able to talk about them with an adult and actually talk about the things that I was seeing so that I could understand that, maybe that scene in Heather's where there's somebody clearly being sexually assaulted in the background and it's played for sarcastic laughs, maybe that's something that I should be thinking about. It's like, that's probably a little irresponsible. Then again, this is one of those things that we're always going to be confronted with, these subjects, is that this is 13 Reasons Why actually was a successful young adult novel. And it is a series that is about the teenage experience, and it's an interesting way of telling something that is essentially a murder mystery.
Always going to be a challenge coping with how you depict things that are incredibly sensitive and might hurt some people or might enlighten others. Melanie McFarlane, TV critic at Salon, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Joining me now from Portland, Oregon, is Dr. Jennifer Hagman. She's medical director of the Eating Disorders Program at Children's Hospital in Colorado. She's an associate professor of psychiatry at the University of Colorado. Dr. Hagman, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you, John.
Doctor, I want to start by getting in one caller who might tee off this discussion. We've got Sebastian on the line from Shelby, North Carolina. Sebastian, go right ahead.
Hi. Reality brought people to the point to where they're becoming anorexic. So reality is what we need to see and what we go to for some kind of education, because what we see in this show and this movie, that's not something that you're not going to be taught about in school or church, but it's real life. You have never heard a soldier say, "We had too much ammunition." And when you're dealing with something that is devastating, to take your life, you need to be educated in as many ways and get as much ammunition as possible. As far as where something can push someone to, You know what? You can put a chain on a dog to keep a dog from going too far in any direction, but you can't put a chain on people's brain to keep them from going too far when they begin to think, I'm going to commit suicide, or I'm going to go into these things. And most people don't even recognize the distances that the problem is taking them to. So I thank God. I thank the creator for this moment, this movie that teaches people about reality. Thank you so much.
Sebastian, thank you so much. And Dr. Hagman, at a fundamental level, is Sebastian right?
Well, I do think, Sebastian, that elevating the conversation and having portrayals in the media does in many ways help get the conversation like the one we're having going. I do worry about the target audience in particular for this film and for the other one, 13 Reasons Why, primarily young adults and teenagers potentially who may not get the message that we'd really like them to take from this movie.
Another issue related to that is that Lily Collins, the actress, who herself has suffered from an eating disorder, lost weight for this film. What's your view of the wisdom of that from either her point of view or the movie maker's point of view?
Right. I had significant concerns about that aspect. One of the most challenging parts of recovery for someone with any form of an eating disorder is not slipping back into the illness. And dieting and active weight loss is one of the most dangerous triggers for relapse. And so I did have that concern as well.
Would you recommend to parents of teenagers that they let their kids see this movie?
That's a difficult question to answer. I think the actors also filmed a very powerful public service announcement, 9 Facts About Eating Disorders. And I think if someone watched that before and after watching the film, I think the message would be much more powerful. I do worry about the film as a standalone with no warnings about triggers and no following. You have to look for that public service announcement.
Do you think that movies like this should get some sort of a special rating that would be a signal to parents?
I do. I think that would be helpful because the target audience on this type of film is really a young adult population, not older adults or therapists.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. With Rocket Mortgage, you can apply simply and understand fully so you can mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about To the Bone, the new Netflix film about anorexia. How should the media handle sensitive material? You can join the conversation. Do you have a limit for what you'll watch on TV or in the movies? How does upsetting content affect you, your behavior? What baggage do you bring when you sit in front of the screen? With me is Dr. Jennifer Hagman, medical director of the Eating Disorders Program at Children's Hospital in Colorado. Dr. Hagman, I want to play this clip on the point that we just discussed about Lily Collins and her decision to lose weight and take this role. She discussed that in an interview, and here's what she had to say.
I thought that this would be an amazing way for me to almost face a fear and go through it again, but to tell a greater story and to really open up a conversation among young girls and guys.
Face the fear and go through it again. Your reaction?
Well, for most people, that's not how it works out. Oftentimes, people with anorexia nervosa in particular think they can just lose a little bit of weight or go through it one more time and recover in a different way or gain the weight back in a different way. And what typically happens is triggering of another fairly severe episode, and not everyone recovers. This is an illness that has the highest mortality rate of any mental illness and not something that you can just drop into lightly and come back out of again. It's very challenging.
All right, let's go to another caller. We've got Emily on the line from Scarborough, Maine. Emily, welcome to On Point. What's your question?
Hi, John. Yeah, I just want to point out that Lily Collins is on the cover this month of Shape magazine, which is marketed to women as a, you know, healthful eating and fitness guide. And that's like coming right off the heels of this movie where she is portraying an anorexic, but it's kind of a dangerous juxtaposition.
Dr. Hagman, what do you think about magazine covers for an actress in a situation like this?
Well, I think there's no question that, that magazine covers and actresses portraying very thin images can be very triggering. I think it does go quite a long way towards glamorizing an illness that is quite severe and can really destroy lives. So I have real concerns about that.
All right, let's go to another caller. Carl is on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, welcome to On Point.
Hi. You know, as a father of five, I would love to think that me and my wife have raised five well-adjusted human beings. And I'm just not a fan of censoring art. And I do believe that art, television, movie is a form of art. I'm not a fan of censoring literature. But what I am a fan of is parents taking control. And what me and my wife has done with our five children is, you know, we let them know that, hey, you know, just because Arnold Schwarzenegger shot up 1,000 people doesn't mean that this is what normal adults, normal human beings do. This is a form of art. And I believe if the parents would adjust their children accordingly and raise them accordingly, then we wouldn't even have the discussion. We wouldn't need someone to censor something for us. I'm just a firm believer that censorship starts at home, not with an agency anywhere telling me or telling my children, okay, this is what you can watch and this is what you can't watch. I believe that's left up to the parents. And if parents do that, I don't think we would have a problem with something like To the Bone or the other movie on Netflix at all.
Carl, thanks very much for your call. Dr. Hagman, do you agree with Carl's point? And I would just note that there are some children out there who might not have parents as conscientious as Carl.
Right. I agree with Carl very much that I think the role of parents in helping kids understand what they're seeing, what they're feeling about it, and providing different perspectives is very important. And I do have that worry with this particular film that there's really no kind of packaging, like I was noting with that public service announcement. A kid won't find that attached to the movie. And for a kid or young adult who watches this without another perspective present, they might take the wrong message from this film or simply compare to the more extreme behaviors that are portrayed and not have a different opportunity to sort out what they think about it.
Okay, we've also got Angela on the line from Baltimore. Angela, you're on with Dr. Jennifer Hagman, who's an expert in this field. What's your question?
Hi, John. Hi, Jennifer. My question is it possible that this is uniquely American? And I say this, I ask this, because I was raised on some military bases overseas. I'm 39 now, and I feel in control of my body just through yoga and things like that. But I spent a lot of time looking at magazines. I don't know if I can say the names of them on air, but like 17 Magazine, TV Guide. And I remember specifically reading fiction stories and nonfiction stories about Tracy Gold's bulimia, for one. But a fiction story in particular stands out from when I was 17, and it was a girl talking about how she hated her body. The tops of her thighs looked like ham hocks, and she wanted to carve them away. But it gave me, I was very suggestible, it gave me sort of a blueprint for what to not eat. And then the Tracy Gold story, it was talking about how she, like, instead of using butter, she would like spray one of those butter sprays on her food. And it really just kind of gave me, like I said, a blueprint or a menu for what not to eat. And
Angela,
it was about control.
Angela, does your experience make you think that a teenager, 17-year-old should not watch this movie?
Do I think a 17-year-old shouldn't watch this movie? No, I think that somebody should be laughing at what is shown in this movie. Like some kind of mockery should be made about how much pressure and stress is targeted towards teenage girls. Because I think that's the strength I felt like European women when I was a teenager in Europe had different bodies than American women. They weren't as competitively thin. And when I come back, like, at 18 to America, I just saw a different, like, dichotomy, like, much more skinny women and beefier guys in America. And so I think that, I think that if the movie is shown, I think that, like, the bookending of the points, I think, that the actors made that the speaker said was not in the movie should be added. I think there should be an addendum or a rebuttal, you know, that's made available either through YouTube or some kind of online rebuttal that's recommended for anybody who does see the movie. Because I think kids are suggestible, and I think visuals really stick with you, and lines in stories, either fiction or in TV guide, they stick with you because it's all about control. So I think...
Angela, thanks so much for your call. I appreciate it. Dr. Hagman, your reaction to Angela's experience, and is she right that this is a culturally specific disorder to modern-day America?
So I absolutely agree with Angela that, and again, it's my concern about the more vulnerable population. The lens through which you watch this film will really drive what message you take from it. And the vast majority of the film is about the more extreme thinness, very little about the recovery process or some of the aspects that just really are very irrational. So that's one of my concerns as well. I think she stated that very well. It's a myth that eating disorders really only strike folks in the United States or in more westernized cultures. I just came back from an international eating disorder congress meeting in Prague, and these illnesses are spread across the globe, across different ethnic groups, age groups. They're everywhere. And so I think it's a myth that they only occur in the United States. Our thin ideal culture, which has spread across the globe, increases vulnerability to developing an eating disorder. But there you find them in every country.
Dr. Jennifer Hagman, Medical Director of the Eating Disorders Program at Children's Hospital Colorado, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, John.
And we want to note that the cast of To the Bone did, in fact, make a public service announcement about eating disorders. You can watch it on our website, onpointradio.org. Now, joining us now from Madison, Wisconsin, is Jonathan Gray. He's professor of media and cultural studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's a Peabody Media Center fellow. Jonathan, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
And joining us via Skype from Tenants Harbor, Maine, is Catherine Steiner Adair. She's a clinical psychologist and research associate at Harvard Medical School. She's the author of the 2014 book, The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relations in the Digital Age. Catherine, welcome back to On Point. Jonathan, let me start by asking you this question and broaden it out from the movie that we've been discussing, To the Bone. What is your view, to the extent that you've studied it and read other people's research, of the idea that either large numbers of people or some small subset of vulnerable people might be endangered in terms of a reaction to a piece of video, a television show, something they read?
Yeah, that's always going to be a concern. So we always need to be thinking about the way that media is framed. But that's why the analysis of this should always take that framing into account. You know, we rarely have ever encounter media blind, blindfolded, having no idea of what we're seeing. And so what's really part of the question here is things like, you know, this PSA that you said was recorded, or what are the conversations like the one we're having now? What I think the real challenge for us is often to think not just what is the piece of art saying, but what can the culture as a whole do to create a conversation around it that actually helps to sort of, you know, fill in the gaps or to give a healthy framing to the debate and the discussion that and the sort of the interpretation that occurs thereafter.
Catherine Steiner Adair, we lost your line for a moment. You're back now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Let me just ask you to summarize what the message of the book that you wrote called The Big Disconnect, Protecting Childhood and Family Relations in the Digital Age. We're discussing the impact of a major motion picture on people who might be vulnerable to the disorder that the motion picture depicts. How important is limiting someone's media intake, either for small numbers of people or large numbers of people?
Well, I guess where I would approach it is a bit differently than, and I think what we have to understand is teenagers and kids are growing up in a completely different world where they have unlimited access to all kinds of information. So I think the challenge is really to think about what are additional things that parents and teachers and schools need to offer children to be able to make sense of and understand a movie like To the Bone or 13 Reasons Why. And I think we have to rethink the core curriculum and put primary prevention for eating disorders, for cutting, for depression, for anxiety. I mean, one thing that we know is that there's been a huge spike in statistically significant spike in anxiety disorders in kids since smartphones have come out in the past 10 years. And that could be related to many different things. But these are very powerful devices, and children are growing up exposed to tons of things like this movie, and they need the tools to deconstruct all the different messages, both in the movie as well as for themselves, living in a culture, in this case, that still idealizes a dangerously thin image of women.
So, in other words, the answer is more of other supplemental things rather than less in terms of consuming controversial or provocative media.
I'm an educator. I'm all for education. I think we don't do enough in our country to offer children, teenagers, and as well as parents, really good advice about primary prevention for psychological well-being.
Let's go to one of our callers. We've got Michael on the line from Wallington, New Jersey. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jan. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a sociologist and a mass comm scholar, so I have acute interest in this topic, and I really appreciate you taking the time to discuss this. Obviously, eating disorders, like Dr. Hagman said, is a extremely serious problem. But from a mass comm perspective, I am in favor of the movie, having not seen it yet, in the sense that I think that anything that raises awareness about an issue that can help further the discussion is a good thing. And I would even make it analogous to like 16 and Pregnant did to teen pregnancy, what this could do for eating disorders. But maybe if we share the reality of the situation in a large channel, that might have a positive impact. I also think that it's kind of silly to pick on eating disorders for mass comm tailoring when we don't do that for violence. We don't watch a violent TV show and then have a PSA before and after say, now, be careful, you know, don't pick up a gun. So I don't know why this issue would get special treatment when there's so many other public health issues out there that warrant, more consideration and don't get it. And finally, I just want to say that as far as eating disorders go, there's a microcosm online of websites dedicated to men and women who are in the active worship of anorexia and bulimia, blogs, all kinds of websites out there. So as far as triggering goes, do I think that this movie would trigger somebody when there's so many much more graphic, potent, and deadly channels out there for young people or any people to engage in? No, I think that hopefully the rewards would outweigh the risks, and I'd like to get your expert's opinions on that.
Michael, thanks so much for your call. Jonathan Gray, what about both of those points? One, that because it's a motion picture involving famous stars, that we give it outsized attention compared to the other things available online. And then secondly, the idea that anorexia is somehow being treated differently from violence and perhaps other behaviors that don't cause people to stop and say, hey, wait, why are they showing that?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many things that the media is telling us about, and there's so many messages that we get that on one level, yeah, we to stop and highlight this one as, oh, wow, the media is actually having effect in this limited moment and kid ourselves into thinking it's not at every other moment. That's definitely a concern. At the same time, I think, hats off to Marty Noxon and Lily Collins if they think that this is extra information they want to offer.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about how the media depicts sensitive imagery and how it affects our psychology and culture. Out today, the new Netflix film To the Bone, about a young woman struggling with anorexia. It's stirring buzz among critics who think it may glamorize the eating disorder. You can join the conversation. Should potentially upsetting stories stick to a certain message? Does the media have a responsibility to protect its audience or not? Is there such a thing as an irresponsible film or TV show? With me is Jonathan Gray, professor of media and cultural studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and Catherine Steiner-Adair, clinical psychologist and research associate at Harvard Medical School. Catherine Steiner-Adair, I want to get you to respond to sentiments that we've seen on our Facebook account and on our website of skepticism about this very conversation. A listener who identifies himself as Granola Bob says the, quote, vulnerable viewer is in control over the media they watch. Another listener who did not identify him or herself says, this is ridiculous. Do you know how many Lifetime movies centered around these themes? I used to watch them all the time at 13. Why all the outrage and worry all of a sudden? And finally, John Cannon writes on our website, the basic question being asked is, do people need a safe space to protect them from triggers? This is an example of how political correctness is destroying public life. Catherine?
Wow. Interesting that three men would respond so vehemently against a film aimed to help a very serious life-threatening issue for young girls. I think that what the gentlemen don't understand is the vulnerability of a viewer who is either flirting with an eating disorder or has an eating disorder. People watch any film, consume any kind of media from wherever they are in their own life. And what we do know from the research on eating disorders is that they are there's a contagion factor. It's interesting that some countries, not America, have outlawed and banned anorexic models from the runway. I was part of the International Academy of Eating Disorders from the prevention side of things many years ago, really trying to raise awareness that when you have an image of beauty that is a deadly disease, something is quite wrong. And we have to think about what's up between girls' bodies and the body politic. And we know that these images can trigger things for girls, and they can trigger things for boys. And it's across race, class, culture, and gender fluidity. So I think that the issue is one about responsibility and education, and what are constructive ways to raise the conversation about something that affects many people's lives. This is an illness that has the highest mortality rate of any psychiatric disorder. We need to do a lot of education and prevention.
Jonathan, what do you think about the those comments that I read, the idea that this very discussion is an example of stifling political correctness?
Well, you know, I mean, we need to be able to discuss things. I mean, that's what great stories are, is they're discussion engines. And while I'm wary if the discussion turned to the point of therefore we should censor it and not have the media or not have the discussion, I'd have a problem with that. But I think the discussion can be really helpful. I mean, I'd also want us to think about what this means for the, quote, non-vulnerable audience. You know, I think I said stories are good discussion engines. They're also great empathy engines. And the value of a great story might be that it gets people to care about something that otherwise they didn't. And I would hope that someone with an eating disorder, of course, already cares about the issue. But there are a lot of people out there who don't know that they need to care about it. And a movie like this might provide some empathy, allow them to think about people who are suffering from this in a different light, and to engage with them in a more respectful manner. I don't think that's about political correctness. I think it's just about sort of, you know, getting empathy and caring going. I mean, once it turns to shutting things down, yeah, there's a problem. But if we're talking about keeping the discussion going, I'm all for that.
All right, let's go to another caller. We've got Sherry on the line from Tampa, Florida. Sherry, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John. I'm calling from the perspective of someone who's dealt with an eating disorder for the past 14 years. I started with an eating disorder when I was 14, and I think movies like this are really good for people because it really does help to open the dialogue, because it's such a secretive disorder, and another part of that is a lot of the people that are affected by this type of thing, they're going to do it. It's not going to be one movie that makes them decide, this is what I want to do. It's going to be a series of things that, over for me, it was years in the making before I actually started engaging in those behaviors. So, yeah, that's just my opinion, though.
Thanks so much, Sherry, for your call. Have you seen this movie, or do you plan to?
No, I don't want to watch it. I don't have Netflix, so I'm not going to be watching it.
All right. Well, good luck with the continued coping with that disorder, and I appreciate your call. Catherine Steiner-Adair, Sherry makes the point that this is just a piece of media like this is one small element that is not likely to be determinative.
I think that's generally true. I think there, you know, if someone's very vulnerable and struggling, and the risk is that, you know, someone who's already flirting with an eating disorder will think, oh, well, I want Lily could lose weight and then gain it right back. So maybe I can keep losing weight and I won't get deadly sick, or, you know, that's not going to happen to me. Or it's very hard to understand the way in which a movie like that could be seriously triggering for somebody else. But I think, you know, I agree. A film like this raises the potential for a lot of understanding, a lot of conversation. I think that empathy for people who suffer from these disorders is important. And one of the things you do want when a movie like this comes out is to have an educational guide for counselors, for teachers, for families, for, you know, clinicians. And, you know, I would love to see them continue to do the kinds of outreach and education that the filmmakers and actors are doing, and maybe, you know, come up with some more materials. And I think the other thing that's very hard is it's very hard for people, you know, she doesn't have Netflix, so that makes it an easy choice. I think it's hard for some people to decide whether they're going to watch something or not that may or not be triggering for them. So the more public announcements that precede a film like this to say this could be upsetting to you, you know, or somebody you know, and this could also help you help somebody you know, or help you understand somebody who's struggling with this disorder. I think any kind of viewer information up front is very helpful in these kinds of situations.
All right, let's go to another call. We've got Brendan on the line from Dayton, Ohio. Brendan, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thank you. I wanted to make a quick comment with regard to the context with which we view art, really the expression of the human condition. And as a soldier, I think that it is important that we look at things like Saving Private Ryan. We look at Band of Brothers and the heroism and the horror and the terribleness of those experiences that our predecessors went through. It is of extraordinary value, even though it is difficult to watch. It is difficult to process. It's going to be a very difficult thing for my daughter to watch and to know that her dad is going to be potentially in those situations. And so as perhaps not necessarily just in regards to this film, but as a general comment about art and its purpose, it does have value and it does need to be looked at, I think, with guidance and with context.
Brendan, thanks so much for your call. Jonathan, I want you to comment on Brendan's observation, but first I'm going to play a clip from the 2010 film Saw 7, the most recent installment of the popular Saw horror franchise. Bobby Dagan, played by Sean Patrick Flannery, is abducted by a rogue detective. Here's a scene where Bobby tries to save his lawyer, Suzanne, played by Rebecca Marshall. Suzanne's trapped in a machine that will impale and kill her unless Bobby can help. The detective lays out the stakes, a warning to listeners. This scene is graphic, and I'll get you to respond on the other side.
Hello, Bobby. That feeling running through your body is fear. The fear of not knowing if you have what it takes to survive. Before you is your lawyer, who swore an oath of ethics but chose to see no evil in order to benefit herself. Once her device begins to rotate, it will pierce her eyes and mouth if you don't delay its movement for at least 30 seconds.
So, Jonathan, there's a piece of art that speaks to the issue of violence that our caller, Brendan, was just talking about. Do you agree with him? People need to see this stuff?
Yeah, I agree with him. I mean, the Saw movies are exploitative. They're often showing us images of violence with no real sort of attempt to get us to think about a much deeper
obviously much issue. Different from a war movie, for example.
Yeah, whereas – I mean I think he brings up a really good point that, you know, stories often – one of the great ways that stories can get us to think and care about things is by putting us through a harrowing journey. I mean – by the end of the first 10 minutes of Saving Private Ryan, as he brings up, you know, the viewer feels assaulted. But that's an important feeling to have to get the message that it has about violence, about war. And I think similarly, you know, when we look at things like 13 Reasons Why or we look at To the Bone, you know, there's a journey that the characters go through that is at times really uncomfortable. And that's why we have discussions about triggering for vulnerable viewers. But those that experience of discomfort of being intensely, you know, intensely hard viewing, I think sometimes can be absolutely vital to making us care and to getting us to really think about the reality of an issue rather than presenting us with the sort of, you know, dust it off, leave it to Beaver like speech on, you know, the bullet points that we should know. We need to get dirty in stories sometimes, and it's by doing that that we're going to have the best sort of interaction with and interpretation of and the most lasting impact from some media can come precisely through that harrowing journey.
Okay, back to the phones. We've got Matthew on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thank you for having this conversation. I'm a middle school teacher, and I usually end up learning about these different films and TV shows and books through my students, who my sense is they have a very strong emotional reaction to them, and then definitely seem to have a want to discuss them. Mm-hmm. And my question for both of your guests, particularly Ms. Steiner-Adair, who we were fortunate enough to have on our campus last year and speak to our kids about responsible, you know, digital life, is how can we as a school thread that needle of respecting the diverse backgrounds of our families, who they themselves are having different reactions to these types of media, but then also importantly for me as an educator, how do I get it so that we don't just steamroll over, you know, our students' reaction to this and say, you know, really give them the chance to really work through how they feel and then give our perspective that has to be really in union with the families who choose to come to our school.
Matthew, terrific perspective. Catherine?
Well, hi, Matthew. I think that what you are doing at your school and what schools are doing more and more is creating spaces like in advisory where there's the possibility to have not just a one-off, but an ongoing conversation that brings together a safe place where kids can talk about the range of their reactions, but also learn very important lessons about how to prevent eating disorders, how to help a friend who has an eating disorder, how to find the person at school who can help you, how to get someone to help you to tell your parents, etc. And I think that what I see more and more schools doing is dedicating the same amount of time we give to English, math, science to issues of psychological development, issues of being human, issues of life online, how to be a digital citizen, but also how to really stay healthy in your body as you grow up in this culture, particularly when we're exposed to so many things like violence, like gratuitous rape on films, like, you know, images that are profound and sometimes disturbing to kids and sometimes, you know, in their lives. If you think about kids watching more media, whatever it is, YouTube, videos, Netflix, then they're actually doing, spending studying for their homework or other things in their lives. We need to create spaces that allow for kids at school with the adults who can teach them, as well as outreach to parents to bring them to school. So parents also know, how do we talk about this with our kids?
Well, one of the things that's we need, I think, to remind ourselves is that this issue's been with us for a long time. It's not just about the digital age. Let's take a listen to this clip from the 1980 film, Ordinary People, which told the story of an upper-middle-class family in Lake Forest, Illinois, following the death of one of their sons in a boating accident. Unable to save his brother, Conrad, played by Tim Hutton, then tried to kill himself. Here's Conrad with his psychiatrist, played by Judd Hirsch, explaining why he thinks his mother will never forgive him.
Come on, you must be able to come up with at least one example. And don't give me I try to kill myself. That's old turkey. What have you done lately?
Lately? Mm-hmm. Hey, come on, if you... Listen, I'm never going to be forgiven for that. Never. You know, you can't get it out. You know, all the blood in her towels and her rug. Everything had to be pitched. Even the tile in the bathroom had to be regrouted. Christ, she fired the goddamn maid because she couldn't dust the living room right.
Jonathan, a lot of people were shocked about that movie at the time. Is this an evergreen discussion that we're having about media and topics of this kind, and where do you see it going?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as long as there have been stories, there have been people reacting to how they're told and to the means by which we tell them and to the – you know, there's perpetual concern with what we call third-person effects, the idea that, like, you and I get it, but we're worried about that other person. These have always existed. It's why, as other guests have said, we need to talk about this earlier at school levels and take it seriously and find spaces where we can have those thoughtful discussions in which we listen rather than just speaking.
And we will keep having those discussions. Jonathan Gray, professor of media and cultural studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Catherine Steiner-Adair, clinical psychologist and research associate at Harvard Medical School, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You can continue the conversation and get the Odd Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up Monday, human rights around the world following the death of a Chinese dissident. I'm John Harwood in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.